Hey everybody, Wasilla Steve here from Alaska. You know, I listen to 5 or 6 podcasts regularly, and one of them is The Handgun World. And why? Because I, too, am a cancer survivor. And because Bob survived cancer, and I survived cancer, Bob got the pleasure of teaching me in 2 of his classes. And boy, did he ever enjoy that. And I'm not trying to brag or anything, but he taught the best student he has ever had. That being my good friend who attended the classes with me. So here now, a true survivor, a great American, and hands down, one of the best instructors I know, Bob Main.
Welcome to episode 462 of the Handgun World Podcast. I'm Bob Main, I'm your host. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This podcast is releasing on September 1st, 2018. So this time, I've got a couple of interviews coming up. First, I'm going to talk with Ben Branham, and then I'm going to be talking with another guest. I'll announce that here in the second part of the show, in the second part of this episode, actually. As most of you know, I'm now in the process of the early stages of the 3-gun test. And as I mentioned in the last episode, I'm going to test out 3 different types of guns to figure out what is it that's going to be the best carry gun for Bob Main. I've been a big Glock 19 fan for years and years and years. That's what I've been carrying as my primary carry gun. That might not change. I might still be carrying a Glock 19. I don't know. But I am giving 3 other guns a very, very serious test and a very good hard look to see if they're going to work for me. Right now, I'm shooting my Smith & Wesson M&P 2.0 or my M&P 2.0 Shield. And that is about 99% of the time, all I am carrying is one of those 2 guns. And that's all I'm shooting is one of those 2 guns. M&P 2.0 Compact, M&P 2.0 Shield. Occasionally during these next few months, I may bring out the Glock 19 and the Glock 43 combo. You know, those 2 guns are so similar, really. I mean, yes, the ergonomics are different, but as far as the manual of arms and how they feel when I shoot them, they're very similar. I'm in the process of selecting a double-action gun, and you're going to hear in the interview coming up with Ben Branham, there's one that we have in mind, and that is possibly the Ruger Security 9, although I'm going to be talking to Ben about this shortly. The CZ P07 is also another one that I think I would like to try. So I'm not 100% sure yet if we're going to do the Security 9 by Ruger or going to be doing the CZ. One thing I don't really care too much about on the Ruger pistol is, if I'm not mistaken, it's got a manual safety. Ruger puts a lot of manual thumb safeties on their pistols. I don't know why. I just think it's kind of silly. On any gun that's a double-action gun or a striker-fired gun, why the thumb safety? Just my humble opinion, okay? A thumb safety really only belongs on a gun that is single-action only. Single-action only. Or a gun that's going to be carried in single-action only condition. Then a thumb safety is actually necessary. Manual thumb safety is necessary. But why on double action? I don't get that. Anyway, now, if I'm wrong, you know, set me straight. Call my voicemail or email or something, and we'll go from there. I want to correct something from the last episode. I've been getting a lot of emails about something I said in the last episode. In the last episode, I was talking about basically, my words were, money is the root of all evil. And I was saying that the Bible says that money is the root of all evil. That's wrong. That's wrong. The love of money is the root of all types of evil. And that's what the Bible says. So let me correct that. The love of money. I knew that. I just misspoke. It was only a misspoke. It's your attitude about money. If money is the only thing important in your life, that's going to be causing, I think, a lot of evil, a lot of problems for you. If the love of that, if you love that more than anything else. My mentor, when I was a young adult and getting my feet wet in the business world and in the world of just life in general, he used to have a great saying, which I thought was really good. He said, love people and use money instead of loving. Excuse me. He said, love people and use money instead of using people and loving money. And I think that's, you know, right on target. So, sorry, I made that mistake last time. That's not what the Bible says. It's in the first chapter of Timothy, I believe, is where that comes from. The love of money is the root of all types of evil, or the root of all evil. And it depends on which interpretation of the Bible that you're reading. But I just wanted to set that record straight. Thank you to all of you who emailed me and caught my mistake. Said, hey, Bob, you know what? That's not quite right. I don't mind when people do that, you know? When I say something incorrect, I want to be precise. I definitely want to be precise in what I say. And, you know, sometimes I might get distracted a little bit when I'm doing this show, and I might say something a little bit off, and so I'm glad you catch me. I have a voicemail that you can always phone in comments, corrections, or just general information that you want to share with my listeners. That's 210-646-1727, 210-646-1727. I love getting voicemails or emails. You can email me at handgunworld@gmail.com. All one word, handgunworld@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Facebook. You can follow Handgun World Podcast on Facebook, or you can just follow me personally on Facebook, whatever you want to do. Handgun World on Twitter. All kinds of ways to find me, all kinds of ways to contact me. So, I'm cruising in the Handgun World Mobile Studio, if you can't tell. Returning home from a business trip, my day job out there making some money, doing what I do best. I'm just an everyday guy, as most of you know. No gunsmithing background, no military background, no law enforcement background. I'm just a dude, just a family man, just a guy out there every day trying to make a living, like a lot of ordinary people just trying to make a living. But I love shooting, concealed carry. It's just been a great passion of mine since 2005 when I got into it very seriously. And I talk about my story and bring it to you. So here we go. I think I'd like to start off by kind of prefacing this upcoming interview that I had with Ben Branham. We went to an IDPA match. That's Ben Branham of the Modern Self-Protection Podcast, a podcast you need to listen to if you're serious about concealed carry and training and shooting and sometimes even competition shooting. Ben has unique qualities as an instructor, and he also does a very good podcast, and it's my honor to be a co-instructor with him most of the time when he goes out and teaches. I tag along and help teach the class as well. It's my honor because he has a lot of very good information to share. We sat in my truck after the IDPA match before we went out to lunch, and you know, we just kind of talked about the match. We talked about some guns. We talked about the M&P 2.0 compact. The conversation even kind of strayed off into the different types of striker-fired guns that are out on the market today and what might be the origin of some of the different types of striker-fired guns that we see on the market. Here you go. Enjoy my talk with Ben Branham. Ben Branham's with me, and we just finished shooting IDPA at Cedar Ridge Range in San Antonio. Ben, welcome back.
Yeah, fun. We shot today. We need to shoot more. We need to get more, just more competition because it's fun.
It is fun. Almost 100 degrees today.
It was 100 out there on the range. It was hot.
It was nasty. But we come to expect that here in South Texas.
Yeah, welcome to San Antonio in August.
Yes.
Whatever day it is.
It was good to get out. You know, I keep saying all the time on my show how fun it is to go shoot competition. And nothing's worth doing if it isn't fun, in my opinion.
Yeah, and for me, you know what? We haven't been doing this for a while, and I know your job's been a stress, a pain in the butt lately. My new job and my thing has been a stress and a pain in the butt lately. So when you said, let's go shooting last week, I put it on the calendar. I blocked it out. I'm like, that's it. We're going.
Yeah, we're going.
Yeah, so I had a smile on my face all day and didn't worry about work until after it was over. I looked at my emails, and you know what? The world didn't end. I'll get to it later.
And as they say, a bad day shooting is better than a good day working, right?
Yes, it was much better than but I had a good day shooting.
I had a bad day shooting. You had a good day shooting.
I had a pretty good day. Those rounds were going where I wanted them to. I altered my gun again. I put those speed sights back on my M&P.
Speed sights. Now, I remember those.
Yeah, Bob sold. He used to be the distributor and sold me the first set of them.
One of
the dealers, I'm sorry. Yeah, and he used to do that, and he sold me a set for my Glock. I put them on there. And then I fell in love with them, and they were so expensive that I just kind of, you know, let them go, tried a bunch of different other sights. And then one of my students said, you know, what's your favorite sight? Well, the speed sight, but they're super expensive. She bought a set, and I shot her gun again. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to buy some more. So that's what I did with our earnings from our last class, is I bought new sights for my gun and a case of ammo, you know.
So why did you go back to the speed sights? What? Tell people what you like.
Well, they got brighter, so they're super bright. It's a weird shape. You almost have to see them. They're diamonds instead of a square post. So you got a front post in the front, but it's a diamond-shaped post, and almost three legs of the diamond. So there's the tip on top, and then the two tips on the outside, and the rear sight is set up the same way. So you can align all three tips on the diamonds. This kind of doesn't sound good, does it?
No,
but
it sounds.
Trying to get equal distance in between each side, the diamonds actually just touch on the outsides, and then you're perfectly aligned up and down, left and right. And then the tip of the front target for me makes it even more precise when I want to make those long shots. So I bought them for really the long shot stuff. And then when it came, I was really impressed that they've upgraded their sight. They put white in the back and green in the front, and the green covers the entire diamond shape. And it is like the brightest green paint I've ever seen on a sight.
Are yours the night sight version or not?
Oh, yeah. I bought the night sight version, too. So the dots, I've got to test those. I don't think they're going to be real accurate. And they're not as bright as I want them to be when I was looking at them running around the house in the dark. I'm used to the True Glow sights that were the brightest freaking thing at night. They were almost bright enough to ruin your night vision. That's what I got used to. So these are a little bit dimmer. But as a day glow sight, that day glow, whatever green they put on that front sight, it is just the brightest thing I've ever seen. So when I pull it out and stick it in front of me to do the IDPA today, I mean, there was no way I could miss that front sight when I got it in there. So it was kind of, I'm liking them even more, and I'm just going to have to, I think I paid almost $180 for the sights, plus I had to install them, which cost me a bunch of computer work. Plug for Sparks Firearms, they're still doing gun shows, but I was like, I called him. Can I borrow your sight pusher? And he goes, yeah, sure. As long as you come and do some computer work for me. So it cost me a little time. Steve's a good guy, though. I was more than happy to go trade him some time, computer stuff, so I could use this really expensive. Some of those tools are like $250. So I didn't want to buy one, and I didn't want to pay somebody else to do it because I know they'll screw it up, even though I screwed it up anyways, and it shoots a little bit to the right. But, you know, what are you going to say?
Well, I used speed sights for a couple of years, and you're right. I think it was about 4 years ago. I made a deal with Don, and I was doing some selling of those sights. It didn't work out too well for me, but the sights were great. I might switch back. I might put those speed sights. I saved them. I've got the green front and the white rears. It's really good, and I might give those a try again, maybe as part of this test that I'm doing. Maybe put those on my Gen 5 Glock 19, although maybe I'll do it on the Gen 4 19, because my Gen 5 19 I bought, you know, with the Ameriglow orange front dot night sights on it, which I really like. But those speed sights, you know, people think based on, like, if they listen to your explanation, you know, lining up the diamonds and things, people think that's hard. It's not. Those sights are designed to naturally pick up your eyes, or your eyes pick the sights up naturally. That's what I'm saying. And your eyes like to align things. So when you bring the gun up to your line of sight, your eyes automatically going to align those diamonds. Did you find that out?
Yeah, it's kind of like the post and notch, or the ghost ring sights on a rifle, where your mind will want to put the middle of the post, in the middle of the round circle. Same thing with these. Your sight, your eye, and your mind sees these things that should be, they're all symmetrical and all should line up. And then it's just your brain is doing that in the background.
Yeah.
So I don't have to think about it. I don't have to, not that I think about it anymore, trying to find, you know, the equal light on both sides of the front side and then on top equal. I can do that. It's just these are so much faster and easier that I think I'm just going to stick with these forever unless I go to a dot. And that's my next thing I need to try is a dot.
So, yeah, you know. Yeah. Speaking of a dot, oh boy, I started drooling over a gun again. I'm looking for a third gun, but wow, you know, Sig finally came out with the Legion single action only 229 with a red dot on it. Now the big disadvantage is the price of that bad boy, but man, a P229 single action only, thumb safety with a red dot. Oh man, I'm drooling on that.
You know, Bob always asks me, should I buy this gun? And I always tell him, yes, you should buy it so I can shoot it. I can't afford it, so I really want to shoot one.
I can't afford it either. No, let me take that back. I can afford it, but it's not in the budget. See, those are two different things.
Not in the budget. Okay, so
you know, the old saying is, just because you can afford it doesn't mean you should buy it. It's not in my budget. I live on a very strict budget so that I live below my means. How about that? You know that? Living below your means, quite a concept, but it's working very well for me.
I imagine that.
It's working
very well. Yeah, so me and Bob have been saying this now for like 10 years. He always asks me, should I buy this gun or this gun? And I always tell him, you should buy the more expensive one so I can shoot it.
Yeah. Speaking of guns. Okay, so I got my M&P 2.0 compact. Ben, verify that the slide's locked back and verify that that's unloaded, please.
It's empty.
Okay, and no magazine in here?
We're sitting in the truck.
Okay, we're sitting in the truck. Well, one of the things, here, hold the phone and the mic for a minute. One of the things that kind of bothered me about it today, and I noticed this the first time that I shot competition, and it's happened to me again. I'll put pictures on Facebook. But the palm of my hand is pretty red. It's actually gotten a little bit better now. But, you know, look, for this five-stage match today, I only shot like maybe slightly under 100 rounds in this IDPA match. So the aggressive texture is nice. See, there's part of my skin and my DNA on the grip. See? So it's nice, the aggressive... maybe that's not it, but...
No, I'm trying to look over... Oh. So he's got a red bump or a red mark right in the middle of his palm, and I don't know how that came from the gun.
No, it did. It came... It's the back strap's very aggressive.
Huh.
And I've tightened my grip on... It's definitely from shooting. It's definitely from today, because that wasn't there before.
But you have, like, one spot right in the center of your hand.
Well, that's because...
But it doesn't line up with...
There's actually... People don't realize on the MPs, there is a bump. It's not as pronounced of a bump as Glock's, but there is a bump. It's not a flat back strap. So I tightened my grip. I've been training to tighten my grip a lot. Now, one thing that might improve this is maybe putting the small palm swell on the gun... Maybe, because maybe what I'm learning about this gun is the medium is actually a little bit too big if I put the small palm swell. So the next time I shoot this gun, I'm going to try that. I'm going to put the small back strap on, which will make the grip a little bit shorter. That's okay. But I tighten my grip a lot, and then when I bring my weak hand in, I really, you know, choke the snot out of the gun, basically. Well, after about 80 rounds, now I don't have girly hands, but it's kind of beat up. You can see the pictures on Facebook. So it'll cause your hand to get red and a little sore. And here's what I'm thinking. What if I go take an 800-round two-day class with this guy?
Well, so I shot one and last year.
But you didn't shoot... did you shoot 100 rounds consecutively?
I shot Paul Carlson's gun exactly like that. Remember, he brought
his
test
gun. Yeah, but
how
many rounds did you shoot it?
I shot it all day. We shot like 400 rounds.
What did it do to your hand?
Nothing? The Glock actually chewed up my hand. The Glock Gen 5 chewed
up
my
hand.
Well,
see, and that proves that everyone's hands are different. The Glock Gen 5 does not mess my hand up at all.
So it's probably exactly where the little bump on your hand is.
That's what I'm thinking. So maybe if I go to the small back strap?
Yeah, you might get rid of this little bump. That's really weird. Yeah. He's got a mark on his hand where I would have the same kind of mark on my hand when I shoot an itty-bitty gun, where the end of the gun or the heel of the gun digs into my palm because my palm squishes around. I got these giant bear hands.
Yeah.
But yours is in the center. So when I saw it on the range, I thought it was the bottom of the gun, like right here,
No.
But it's not. Yeah, he gets a good full grip on the gun. Yeah.
None of my Glocks have ever done that, and even my Gen 5 Glock has not done that.
Maybe your hands are just getting old.
Yeah, maybe I'm getting old.
Well, yeah, try that smaller base. Yeah, see, this proves, and do it again.
This proves what I'm learning about this three-gun test I'm doing for a year is, you know, you just got to try things to figure out what's going to work best. So I'm thinking maybe this medium backstrap, this is how Smith & Wesson ships it, with the medium backstrap on the gun. Maybe I need to go to the small. So I'm going to try the small.
Well, I have size bear claws, and on my M&P, I use the medium or the small grip.
When I watch you grab it, see, for you on your hands, the bump doesn't hit your hand the same place it hits mine.
Nope.
It hits yours up a little higher because you got much bigger hands. So,
I'm holding the full size grip and my pinky's almost hanging off.
No, it's not a full size grip. That's a compact grip.
Well, the compact grip.
Yeah.
Without a magazine in here, my pinky doesn't even sit on the gun.
Yeah. Even with a magazine, your hand is basically covering up the grip, where mine does not. So, yeah, it's something to think about. I'm going to try it with the small backstrap.
Paul Carlson was out here teaching. We did that class with him.
Yep.
And I shot his gun because he had one, and it just fit in the holsters and everything. So when he said he had his test and evaluation gun, I was like, sure, I'll shoot it. And so, yeah, I put 400 rounds through the gun, and I kind of fell in love with the gun. I might have to buy one.
Yeah.
I got the M&P, the original, and it shoots like a house on fire. And I just I haven't found the reason to change out to the new one. The old one just shoots great for
me. Well, I didn't shoot very well today. It must be a crappy gun. I got to switch back to my Glock then. Maybe that's what the problem is. Ah!
Yeah, no, it's probably.
Anyway.
Probably the gun.
Yeah, it's always the gun. If I don't shoot well, it's always the gun.
It had to be the gun or the sights or something.
Yes, it's the gun or the sights or the trigger, one of the
trigger. You got to replace the trigger. I mean,
Is a replaced trigger.
this super nice, expensive Apex flat face trigger isn't good enough.
The bottom line is I stunk today. So that's the bottom line. But one thing
Bob hasn't been practicing.
I haven't been practicing, yes. But that's changing because I got to be able to tell the listeners about my three-gun test. So here's what I think I'm going to do. The next time I go shoot this gun, I'm going to put the small backstrap on it. I'm going to see if that makes a difference for my hand. And then after that, for about a couple months, I think I'm going to shoot my Glock 19 as well. And kind of, that's in my two striker fire guns are going to be a Glock 19. So I think I'm going to take the request. A couple people sent me a request saying, Bob, if you really want to do a three gun test, you need to do a striker fired gun, a hammered fired gun, and a single action only. And so I'm thinking of buying a double action gun, and you gave me a good suggestion today. Talk about it.
So we were talking about it, and I think maybe we might go halvesies on a gun so that you can try it for a while, I can try it for a while, as the new Ruger Security 9. It's a hammer-fire, double-action, traditional gun, but the price is like $300. It's a Glock size.
I like that.
It's a Glock 19 size gun, so we're going to dig into it a little bit more and see if they have holsters and can we get magazines and how expensive are the magazines. It's great if it's a $300 gun, but if it's a $75 magazine, not really helping us that much. You know, we need at least half a dozen of them, if not a dozen of them, to do a real good test on it. But I think, yeah, we might go halves on that one. You carry it for 4 months, I carry it for 4 months, and then we'll sell it off, see if we can get any money back from it.
Oh, yeah.
Get much for that one because it's it retails, I think, at $329 is the MSRP. So I think we can get one for under $300.
Well, and then what we might do is after we get done testing it, a well-deserving Shooters Club member might get it. We'll kind of hold that in our back pocket.
Maybe we do that. We did that a couple years ago.
But I just kind of want to say, for those of you who are not members of the Shooters Club, you better get signed up. Because let me go ahead and announce something else. This podcast is going to release on September 1st. So, Jason Christensen, owner of Concealment Solutions, has teamed up with us, and we are offering 5 holsters for Shooters Club members. 5 people get a $70 gift certificate. Hey, a $70 gift certificate to get you almost any kind of holster you want for your gun that Concealment Solutions makes. So that's a pretty doggone deal. So what we're going to do is we're going to run this September and October. You have to be an active Shooters Club member in the months of September and October. So in other words, you got to sign up now, and you got to sign up by October 31st to be eligible. So that's going to be the deal, and you'll get a chance to maybe get yourself a $70 gift certificate for Concealment Solutions.
And we're not going to leave you out if you don't really want to be a member. There is a free way to enter. by law, blah, 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 check your local laws, all that stuff applies. But if you want to get a freebie, make a promotional video or a, well, yeah, video and post it on your YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, whatever you got, social media about the show, about what me and Bob do, anything about me and Bob, and then post it up there, send us a link, and we'll, you can have a free entry into our little, giveaway for the holster.
And it's got to be a video. Videos are so easy to make these days. And yeah, that's a way you can get a free entry. So there is a free way. You don't have to buy a membership, and then you will join all the everybody else in the Shooters Club. And
but it's easier to buy a membership than make a video.
Of course, yes.
Point click buy and you're there.
Yes, and you can get a membership for $8 a month or $75 a year.
So yeah, October 31st, we'll pull all the active members, throw them in the electronic hat, do the random generator numbers, and pull five of them, along with whoever sends us a link to their video.
If you send us a video and send us a private message with your name and email address, if you don't want your name and email address in public, just send it to us private message, and we'll make sure that you get on the list. So the Ruger Security 9, that's not a bad idea, Ben. That's not a bad idea. And somebody did kind of give me the idea of testing an affordably priced gun. That's definitely an affordably priced gun.
Yeah, right at $300. Ruger's always.
Are they really $300?
I'm pretty sure. You looked up the MSRP earlier. You were
looking
at the
website.
Yeah, but I
forgot.
Yeah, I think you'll be able to get them right at $300.
No, even if it's $350, that's a heck of a deal.
And yeah, Ruger's always made the tank of guns. You know, they're always indestructible. So what do you really need out of a carry gun? It is something that's always going to go bang.
And
really
reliable.
Yeah. Always
and easy to carry, though. Easy to carry is very
well,
important.
Well, the Ruger's even saying it themselves. It's a Glock 19-sized gun.
Well, everything's a Glock 19-sized gun. But, now, this M&P 2.0 compact, if I hold it right up next to a Glock 19, it's identical dimensions.
Well, Glock hit it out of the park with their size 19 gun.
They did.
When they made one. 15-round magazine, 4-inch barrel. Yep. I don't think you can beat that. So, yeah, the same thing with the Ruger single, or the Security 9. It's a, you know, 15-round magazine, I'm pretty sure, and I know it has a 4-inch barrel, and you hold it up to your Glock 19, it'll be the same size.
Now, keep in mind, we got to shoot it stock. So we can't be going to, you know, throw extra sights on there. Or, I mean, cool sights, and we can't do anything to the trigger. Or anything. We got to test it stock.
I've got no problem with that.
Yeah, we got to test
it's
it.
You
stock.
That always needs to change.
No,
out
I'm
the
not
going to
screw with
stuff.
It. That's one reason why. Actually, I may shoot my Glock 19 Gen 5 a lot more for this test because it's stock. It's stock. I haven't messed with it. I have messed with this M&P 2.0. I put Apex trigger.
I've got like four Glocks, and only one of them I've messed with. The rest of them are all like stock out of the box. I put sights on one of them.
Even with the junky stock sights, I can do okay with those. You know, people they get down on the Glock sights pretty quickly. They're not good sights, okay? I'm not going to say they're good sights. Hey, I've gone out and shot IDPA with the stock sights, and to be honest, my shooting has not gotten any worse with the Glock stock sights.
They work.
And people are saying, well, Bob, what does that say? It says you're a crap. No.
That too. No, the Glock sights, they work. They're plastic. They can break off. But, man, how many front sights have you seen fly off of a Glock because people put them on wrong?
Oh, yeah. You know, I have never seen, I'm not saying this doesn't happen, I've never seen plastic Glock sights break on anybody. I've never seen it. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but I've never seen it.
I'm trying to think of personally if I've ever seen a set broken. Not in our class.
I've never seen him in our classes. I've never seen him in a competition match. I've seen a lot of people show up at competition matches with the stock sights on a Glock.
So I've seen way more aftermarket sights put on a Glock fly off because they're not sights not put on correctly than I've seen factory sights break.
Oh, how many times have you seen this? Somebody on any pistol, not just Glock, they put a nice fiber optic front sight, right? And guess what? The light pipe in the middle comes out.
Yeah, a little fiber optic piece falls off.
The little fiber optic light pipe comes out, and guess what? Now you basically have a black sight. That's it.
A little black post.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, again, I've always said people make too big of a deal over sights. Training is more important than sights. It just is.
Yeah, and you got to get to that point. And there's a point where, you know, you will shoot to X standard with your out-of-the-box gun.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty stinking high standard. I tell most people, 99% of the people out there aren't going to be ever able to outshoot probably this Ruger Security 9 that we want to buy. 99% of all the people out there will never do that. Unless you're going to classes every year, you're practicing at least a couple times a week dry fire, you're going to the range at least once a month, if not more,
yeah.
You are never going to get to the point where you're going to outshoot your stock gun.
It's
just never going to happen.
Not really.
The stock gun will always outshoot you. It's when you get to that point where you're really dry fire every day, you go to the range every week, and you're taking a class every 3 months or 4 months, so you're taking three or four classes a year, and you just can't seem to get your shooting better. Well, now you've hit that point of where that stock gun is the thing that's holding you back.
Yeah,
but there are
people on the planet that can outshoot a stock gun. There are people. There's a good number of people who can outshoot a stock striker fired gun.
I'm right on the edge.
I'm one of those people.
I am so close to the edge that when I'm having a good day, I can outshoot my stock gun.
Yeah.
When I'm having a bad day, the stock gun outshoots me. So I'm on the edge. We can do some tests, and I found some of the tests you and I have done that with the other stuff I can outshoot. I shoot a little bit better with the stuff that's not stock, but it's so close that for self defense, I don't think it matters at all. I want something that's more proven. We were talking about it on the range today. The guy was talking about getting his Glock all done out. He had the Glock 19X.
Yeah.
Really cool custom. Yep. We'll give him a plug. Custom Cerakote here in San Antonio. Yes. Custom Cerakote LLC.
Yes. LLC.
Really cool guy. Nice shooter. Had some really nice guns, but he had a 19X and he wanted to upgrade the trigger. And he was talking about all the Glock parts, and we were kind of funny how you could Lego it. And he was talking about the Zev triggers, and I've seen the problems with the Zev triggers that are firing the guns when you stick them in the holster.
Not good.
Not a good thing. And I'm sure Zev has fixed it by now. But that doesn't give me a warm and fuzzy about a Zev trigger part if I'm going to stick my gun in the holster and it's going to fire the gun. And then it doesn't give me a warm and fuzzy for aftermarket triggers at all. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I kind of worry about when I'm adding all this stuff to my carry gun. This is my carry gun. It needs to go bang above all else.
It needs to. The most important aspect of any carry gun, the absolute most important, is reliability. It has to work when you need it.
And
if
it has
your
to
life
be safe.
Is being threatened, that gun has to work.
And it has to be safe, especially for what I do
safe.
All the time.
Yes.
I'll take my gun on and off. It goes in my bag.
Yes.
I throw my bag around. It gets kicked. It gets knocked out the door.
Yeah.
My gun's been dropped more than once. Most of the time, it's for a demonstration at a class, but not every time. So my gun just needs to be safe. I need to be able to kick it around, throw it on the ground, loaded. Be able to throw it in my bag and throw. And I put it. I don't do naked loaded guns. You put loaded guns in a holster that covers the trigger guard.
Yeah.
Anytime the gun is loaded, you put it in something that covers the trigger guard. We'll put it that way. Even the minimalist holsters work, but. So in my bag, it's in a holster. I put it in a lock holster because I didn't want it to fall out. But it was just, I throw that bag around all the time. And I don't want to worry about this thing. It sits flat on the bottom of the bag, pointed across the bag. So when I pick it up and put it down, it's going to, if I threw the bag down and it fired, it would fire parallel to the ground or whatever I set it on and go straight across. So I don't need to worry about that. I want my gun to be super safe and super reliable.
Yeah.
Yeah, here comes the sick joke.
Uh-oh.
Don't buy the SIG 320. Don't drop it.
No, they fixed it.
I know they fixed
it.
They fixed it, but it was, for years it was the SIG joke.
I know. I got down on SIG for their, drop safe issue, but, I'll say something positive when it's warranted, and I think from what I've been hearing out there and seeing, the new SIG 320s don't have that issue now.
They replaced a couple internal parts and then a trigger, and it's no problem. It doesn't happen anymore, but... hey, that's what your Glock safety is.
Yeah.
Everybody said, so SIG had an original version of the 320 that had that little nub safety, not just like the Glock trigger safety. Well, one of the things they did was they deleted that, and everybody loved it. They liked it without the little nub. I know when you fire your Glock and you feel that little thing on your finger, and you get a little, nobody really likes that. Come on.
It doesn't bother me too much.
Oh, it doesn't bother you, but nobody likes the extra little safety in
Correct.
That.
Yes.
So SIG found a way to delete that.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't find a perfect way to delete that. And that was the same problem Glock had. Without that, if you take that little nub safety, that trigger safety out on your Glock and you drop it on the frame in the slide, barrel up, the weight of the trigger will discharge the gun.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the same problem SIG had. And they had to change some internal parts, so to change the weights in the spring so that that won't happen anymore. But, you know, that's what your Glock, you know, Glock, your super safe action trigger, and it has a safety that disengages itself and, you know, all the other marketing. Now, bullshit, it's all a drop safety. Glock got the gun out, they dropped it, and it went bang, and they went, ooh, we need to figure that out. And Gaston Glock is super bright. I mean, he came up with that whole idea. I mean, the guy's a freaking genius. He deserves every penny he ever made off of Glock firearms because he's that smart. But it just, you know, it's all marketing.
Well, and you know, I got to say something about that. And I know what I'm going to say right now is going to irritate some people. So I'm just going to put that disclaimer out there right now. I'm going to irritate some people, but here I go. Have you ever noticed today how many different versions of Glocks we now have? We got American Glocks. We have Croatian Glocks. We have German Glocks. We have Sig Glocks. we have Ruger style Glocks. I mean, everything is based off of the Glock platform. Have you ever noticed that? The striker fired guns, they in some way, shape, or form, they mimic a Glock. Some striker fired guns, some
inside or
inside. Same. You look at the inside of the frame, and it's you're almost looking at a Glock. I mean, there's one manufacturer. Walther, no, excuse me, sorry, that when you take the slide off of a Walther PPQ, take a look at it, there's a lot of Glock similarities there.
Well, so I've been doing this longer than you have, so I remember the history. So Smith & Wesson, who I carry their guns now, and I love them, they decided they were going to get in the striker fire business a long time ago, and they came out with the Sigma. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes, and didn't they get sued by Glock?
Yes, because you used to be able to take, you could take the slide off of your Glock and put it on your Sigma, and that stupid thing would run.
Yeah.
So people didn't copy it at all.
Most of the striker fired manufacturers today. Come on, let's face it. Let's be real. They're copying Glock, but they're putting a little bit of a different style and their own twist and maybe making it a little bit more ergonomic. And that's about really what they're mostly doing.
Well,
they're copying Glock and making it a little bit more ergonomic and hand friendly.
Smith & Wesson has a different firing mechanism.
Yeah, but you know what? It has a different... Smith & Wesson has a different firing mechanism.
They have a different internal mechanism.
But you know what I did?
But they have the same locking block up front.
They do have the same locking block, yes.
Yeah, a lot of the companies have the same.
You know when the MMPs first the MMPs first came out? I don't know if you can still do this or not. When the full-size MMPs came out, the 4 1/4, you can take a recoil spring assembly out of a Glock 17 and put it into a M&P 4.0.
I forgot about
yes,
that.
You can.
I forgot about
it
that.
And it works just fine. Same recoil spring assembly. So you want to tell me that there's not some copying of Glock in these pistols?
Well, and then who's manufacturing the recoil spring for them? We're getting to the point where you got companies like Wolf Springs that's all they do is springs, and they make a bunch of OEM springs for companies.
Yeah.
Just because they're, instead of having a warehouse that and a manufacturing that has to make barrels, slides, injection molded frames, springs, all that stuff, Wolf Springs has this giant warehouse where all they do is make these springs. So they can produce the spring at half the price Smith & Wesson can. So, you know, why not?
You know, so I know I'm going to get some hate mail about what we just got done saying, but let's all face the truth. No, Glock did not invent the striker-fired gun. But they were the first ones to really popularize the striker-fired gun, and everybody now is making their own version of a better Glock. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, maybe I can find a version of a better Glock, but I can also get a Glock and I can modify it to make it really nice for me, which I have a Glock like that. I have a 4th-gen Glock 19 I've done a great grip job to. I've got about a 10,000 round trigger job on it and nice sights, and it's fine.
Well, it made the whole market better, too.
Made the whole market better, yes.
Gaston came out with the Gen 2 Glocks, and he said, that's it. This is perfection. We're never going to do anything else. And then people started doing things, and you remember that was when we started doing the whole accessory rail. It came super popular.
Right.
Everybody had to have one, and honestly, if you're going to, why not have an accessory rail on there? What if someday you want to put something on there?
Right.
You know, why not? So then he had to come out with the Gen 3 that put the accessory rail in there.
Right.
And added the finger
and
grooves.
And added the finger grooves, which, by the way,
because it was an ATF regulation to import the gun.
Right.
It had nothing to do with anything.
It had nothing to do with anything else except for that. Now, you know, the finger grooves have never bothered me. I know you don't like them.
Never liked them.
Actually, the finger grooves fit my hand perfectly. The finger grooves on a Glock 19 fit my hand perfectly.
Okay.
So, and I've heard from some people that say I don't mind the finger grooves on a Glock.
But now we have the Glock Gen 4s and the Gen 5s. And now we have the little single stack 9mm.
So we have five versions of perfection.
So, yeah. But, no, it just, my point is that these guys coming out with a better mousetrap are making even Glock had to make a better mousetrap.
Right. Well, so and that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a good great thing. Part is we just keep improving the industry, and now we have these great
And there's
guns
nothing wrong. Oh, we also have, so I can't good. Forget, we have Czech Glocks. So we have Czech Glocks, German Glocks, American Glocks, Croatian Glocks.
New PO9.
And we have more American Glocks. Let's see, what other kinds of Glocks do we have? Anyway, all right, I'll shut up because the more I talk, the more hate mail is going to come to me. So anyway, I'm thinking my third gun probably has to be a single action. I'm thinking it has to be a single action.
Well, you should definitely get the RX... Legion, so I can shoot it.
But I can get a nice 1911 too for that much money. Yeah, the MSRP on that SIG with the red dots $1,400. I can get a nice 1911 for $1,400.
Yeah, well, and then you know you could get one of the Czechoslovakian, one of the CZs. It's a
CZ what?
75. It's a single action gun. They make a single action version.
I could
of
also
that.
Get a Dan Don't Wesson like 1911, which is owned by CZ.
Yeah, but it's all a 1911. You want something? Get something 9mm besides a 1911.
That's why that SIG 229 single action only, that's why that's so appealing to me. Because it's a double stack, it's a 15-round gun.
You could go back and get an HK P30.
It's a SIG, and it's a well-built gun. You know, it's got all the Legion features, which has got the nice grip and the small controls and things like that. I need to get my hands on one and dry fire it and play around with it, but... you know, there's some other single-action guns out there. I've always kind of wanted to get a 1911 again, even though people used to say I hate 1911s, but I don't. I kind of like to get a 1911 in 9mm, though. I'm not big on 45 1911s.
I've standardized everything in 9mm. It's just cheaper, lighter, easier.
Yeah.
More fun to shoot, get more bullets. There's not a lot of downside to the 9mm over the 45 or the 9. There's just not.
Not anymore.
No. I have my 45s because it's nostalgia, but I carry all my 9mm. I have 9mm everywhere. With good ammo, you're set with your 9. Anyways, I'm hungry. Let's wrap this up.
Yeah, we're going to wrap this up. So, last words, Ben?
Go buy a gun, stick with it, shoot it a lot, and pick a time frame to stick with that platform before you change out.
Very good. So, we're done. Let's go eat some burgers. What do you think?
I'm starving.
Later.
Thank you, Ben. I hope you enjoyed that. Ben and I don't always agree on everything, but that's okay because it gives you two different types of perspectives on the same subject. Matter of fact, in terms of agreeing, I know you may not always agree with everything I say on this podcast, and you should not. I don't have all the answers. I don't always get everything right, so that's good. I don't mind it if you disagree with me. And I don't mind if you voice your disagreements to me. As I've always said, as long as your disagreement is well thought out, backed up with useful information, then I'm all ears. I'm open-minded. The mind's like a parachute. It works best when it is open. You know, and earlier I was correcting the mistake when I had mentioned, you know, that the money is the root of all evil, and that was a mistake. You know, in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10 from the Bible, it says, "For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." So that's actually what I was referring to. And so I want to be even more precise. I'll say that again. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. Whether or not you are religious at all, I think you will probably agree with that. You know, you can think about, if you think really there are a lot of people who've destroyed themselves and destroyed their family and destroyed a lot of things in the name of money, in the name of the pursuit of money. I like money. Make no mistake about it. I enjoy making money. I think it's great. You know, money does not buy you happiness. But it will let you arrive at all your problems in style. Right? I mean, I like money. I don't love money. I don't love money and use people. It's the other way around. I love people and use money. You know what the great thing is that when you love people, when you love serving people, that's what I mean, the money comes. It just comes. It shows up. It's a unique phenomenon. I learned that when I started this podcast. You know, if I just provide a good service, the money will be there. Not everybody's going to contribute. Not everybody's going to agree. But I look at it and I say, hey, you know, I'm actually making some money from this show. It must mean that people are getting some benefit from it. And speaking of that, we have a great promotion that started now on our Shooters Club for September and October. All active members in September and October, all active members, as you heard Ben and I talk about in the previous segment in the interview, you're going to be able to take part in a chance to win a holster. Even if you're not an active member, there's a free way for you to do it. And we talked about that, making a video. So do that, because at the end of October, you might get a chance to win a Concealment Solutions holster. And there's more benefits for Shooters Club members coming up. Besides that, there's over 75 videos that you can learn a lot from. And you can support the work I do and the work that Ben Branham does at the Modern Self-Protection Podcast for only $8 a month. I mean, that's not much, folks. $8 a month. Don't you waste $8 a month in other areas? Even still today, even though I'm on a tight budget, even though I am a Dave Ramsey enthusiast, and I have no debt except for my home, and I'm on a written budget every single month, sometimes I still waste money. And definitely I waste $8 a month. So instead of wasting $8, how about educating yourself with that $8? Join our Shooters Club. If you want to save a little bit of money, join for an entire year, $75 per year. Just go to shootersclubmembers.com. That's shootersclubmembers.com. And you'll get some good value, more good value coming in the future, more videos coming, more discounts, more incentives. It's excellent. And many of you also, you use my Amazon store, which is still alive and well, and that's great. Whenever you make your Amazon purchases, if you just do a couple things before you make an Amazon purchase, the first thing is go to handgunworld.com. The second thing is click Amazon store. And then log into your account, buy whatever you want. And Amazon will help me, and you'll be helping me, and you're not spending any extra money when you do that. How cool is that? So coming up next, I have another interview that I'm going to allow you to listen to. Before that interview starts, however, I want to talk about again how much I am really a proponent of simplifying and being somewhat of a minimalist in your concealed carry supplies, guns, and things like that. I think straying off into too many different types of weapons and trying to learn too many different types of things, I disagree with some people. Some people in the firearms industry say, well, you need to become a well-rounded shooter. You need to know how to shoot anything. I agree with that. You do need to know how to shoot any kind of gun, but do you really need to be an expert on every type of gun out there? I think that's too unrealistic, especially for the average person. I look at this as an average person. I look at this as, you know, I know a lot of my listeners who are listening to this, they go, they buy one or two guns, they take them out of the box, they don't hardly ever make any modifications at all. They go to the range, they shoot it a few times a year, they get their concealed carry license and put it in their holster and carry it, and that's it. And that's about what most people ever do. Really. I mean, most people don't take two or three classes every year. The large percentage of gun owners do not do that. Unfortunately, I wish they did. I really wish they did, but they don't. And so to ask someone who's just an everyday person that's not really into guns seriously but understands the value of owning a gun and carrying it and being responsible for their own personal safety, to them I would say be a minimalist, be a simplified person. I've said this in many times before. Before you buy any gun, go rent about 10 guns, 10 different types of guns. Go to ranges that rent pistols. Even if it's $15 or $20 a pistol, it's worth the rental fees instead of making a $500 or $600 mistake if you buy a gun and you end up not liking it. And go do that. But I just say, you know, pick something that is going to work for you and stick with it. And then master that gun. And see, that's what this three-gun test is all about for me for the next year. I finally want to settle on something. It's been a struggle. I've been, you know, struggling with this for about 8 to 10 years. What do I carry? What do I carry? What do I carry? I've tried lots of different guns. Lots of different guns. 1911s, double-action, single-action guns, striker-fired guns, Glocks, M&Ps, XDs, Walthers, 1911s, SIG double-actions, revolvers. I've owned them all. I've tried them all. And I just keep coming back to a compact size striker fired gun. And that's probably where I'm gonna end up, although I'm really excited about testing a double action, single action gun for a long period of time. I want to see if it's possible for me to make that work. And that's probably where I'm gonna end up, is with some type of a striker fired compact sized gun, not a subcompact sized gun, but probably a compact size, with a little brother, so to speak, with a smaller version, a smaller single stack, ultra concealable version of the same pistol. I think that's important too. And I want to say this to anybody who is limited in funds, limited in your budget, and you're not really interested in having this big collection of a whole bunch of guns, but you want to find something that works well. Have a larger version and a smaller version of almost the same gun. I think that's a fantastic thing to do. And there's a lot of guns you can do that with. For example, I mean, you can get a Glock 19. You can get the smaller version, which is a Glock 43. You can also get a Glock 42 if you want to have something that's a little bit less recoil and still pretty effective. You can get a Smith & Wesson M&P 2.0 compact, for example, and then get a Smith & Wesson M&P Shield. Almost the same gun, just different sizes. You can get a Walther PPQ M2, and then you can get a Walther PPS M2. Pretty much the same gun, different size. You can get a SIG P320, and then you can get a SIG P365. Pretty much the same gun, just different sizes. So I think that's important. You can also get a 1911 full-sizer Commander, and you can get a smaller, like a 3-inch 1911. You can do that. 3-inch 1911s are not always as reliable as they need to be, but if you can get one and it is reliable, or you can make it reliable, that might not be a bad combination. If you're a revolver enthusiast, you can get a full-size revolver, and then you can carry a J-frame-sized revolver for your pocket or deep concealment inside the waistband. I think I think it's very important to have more than just one handgun, but keep it the same type of handgun and have a larger size and a smaller size version that are almost the same. All right, that's enough of that. Time for the next interview. My sincere apologies, but my second guest was not able to make it. I'm going to try to get him rescheduled for September 15th. But I do have some voicemails that I would like to discuss that came in from listeners recently. And also, I want to tell you, I got a new sponsor, Ammo.com. Now, I have checked this company out, and I've talked to one of their marketing representatives. Ammo.com now has an excellent discount going, $20 off of a $200 or more order at ammo.com. There's a special page, ammo.com/handgunworld, and that is my affiliate link. You'll also help me out if you place your ammo order using my affiliate link that will be in the show notes, ammo.com. There will be some more benefits coming up soon from ammo.com that I can talk to you about as well. So check them out. Here is the first voicemail.
Hey Bob, it's David, Utah. In your recent episode, you're deciding what to do for your third gun that you're going to test out, or your third set of guns that you're going to test out. I'm in fine if they give the SIG 320 a try and the SIG 365? I think, especially if we do them last to the end of the year, as far as I know, all the issues with the trigger have been worked out on the 360 or the 320, and some of the rush production / first production run problems of the 365 should be worked out, and you can get them with the night sight, and I think this should work. I predict my guess is that you'll probably like the trigger on the 320, but you might be a little skeptical of the high bore axis. So, I've never shot one, so they may have solved the problem of the muzzle flipping a little on a high bore axis. It could be the softest shooting gun in the world. I'm not sure. Another gun that you ought to consider, or maybe you have and dismiss, is the XP. Springfield has a top hack size XP, and then they have that XPS. Personally, it's not really my favorite. I probably would buy an XP over an XP, but I know at least Rob Pincus, for a long time, has said that his XP runs just as well as anything else, and he pretty much uses them exclusively and doesn't have to maintain them and keep them up, and they tend to run for him. So there's that to consider. Hopefully that gives you something to think about, or maybe it muddies the waters even more. I don't know. Anyway, keep up the good work, and talk to you later. Bye.
Dave, thank you. It's interesting that you bring that up, because recently I had some listeners tell me that they are most likely going to let me borrow a SIG P320 and P365 for part of my one-year test. And I think I'm going to do that coming up in December for the second four-month period. So it looks like I might be doing a couple striker-fired guns and maybe one double-action, single-action gun to complete the one-year test of my three guns, trying to decide which I'm going to carry. So, Dave, thanks again for calling in that voicemail and that idea, and I will be giving you more details on the two SIGs that I'm likely going to be able to borrow. It's not 100% sure yet. We don't have all the details worked out, but I will be announcing that a little bit later, maybe as early as my September 15th episode. By the way, ammo.com also donates to charitable, not necessarily charitable, but good organizations whenever you make a purchase through them. The Armed Citizens Education Foundation, which I like, Cal Guns Foundation, Friends of the NRA, Homes for Our Troops, Illinois State Rifle Association, National Rifle Association, Second Amendment Foundation, Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, Institute for Justice, and things like that. Great organizations, some of them nonprofit and things like that. I guess maybe all of them are nonprofit, I'm not quite sure. But this is another reason why I like ammo.com. So once again, ammo.com/handgunworld. Okay, there's two more voicemails.
Hey, Bob, this is Tim from North Carolina. I was just listening to your latest episode where you're talking about taking three guns over the next year and kind of putting them through the paces to decide on what's best for you. And that resonated with me. That's something I typically do every time I am considering changing up my carry gun. And I recently just went through that myself. I had been shooting a traditional double action pistol for about 3.5 years now, and reached a level of proficiency that I was pleased with, but just kind of felt like I was sacrificing something. So I kind of went through the paces and, strangely enough, ended up switching back to a striker fire gun, the Glock 19, and I've been real pleased with it. I've decided that I'm going to commit to that for the next couple of years and shoot it until I get to the level of proficiency that I'm pleased with. And then I may reevaluate, see what other pistols are available. But One thing that I heard recently from Tom Givens on a podcast he was on, he was talking about traditional double action guns, and he said that he was of the mind that it took about 25% more effort to shoot a traditional double action gun at the same level that it would take the same shooter to shoot a striker fire gun. And he said, you know, you can do that. You can put in the time, put in the work, and get there. The question is, why do you really want to? And that got the wheels turning. Anyway, love the podcast. Love all you do. Keep it up. Love the practical, down-to-earth approach. I think it's something that this industry really, really needs, because that's what resonates with most folks. Thanks a lot, Bob. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thank you, Tim, for your compliments. That's very nice of you. Finding something and sticking with it, again, I think is the key. It really is. I know you've gone back to the Glock 19. Who knows? Maybe I'll find myself going back to that, but I got to tell you, I really like this M&P 9 2.0 Compact. M&P 9 2.0 Compact. Now, let me talk about some negatives of this M&P 9 2.0 Compact. You heard me talk about it earlier in this episode during my interview with Ben Branham. When you shoot this gun a lot, it is going to beat up your hands. Now, I don't think that's entirely a negative. This texturing on this gun really makes it extremely easy to get a good grip on this gun, and the gun will not move much in your hands. So while it's a negative, it can also be a positive. I'm probably going to smooth out parts of the grip, only the back strap, and I am going to probably, like I mentioned in the interview with Ben, I'm going to put the small palm swell or small back strap on this gun to see if that is a little bit easier. It won't take up quite so much space in my hand. I would say my hands are medium size, but this M&P 2.0 Compact, I tell you, it's a very well-designed, well-made gun, and they don't cost very much. That's what I like about it. I mean, there are other guns that might be a step above, but they're also going to be a step above in the wallet as well. And I think Smith & Wesson gives a real good value for what you're paying for. I think you get a good gun. I'm trying to keep it as stock as I can. I do have the Apex trigger in it, so okay, that's not stock. I might get another 2.0 Compact pretty soon and just leave it completely 100% stock and incorporate that as part of my test. I'm not sure, because I did say I was going to test guns mostly in stock configuration, because as I mentioned, that's the way a lot of people keep their guns, and many times they never make any modifications at all. It seems like only the real serious shooters and serious concealed carriers end up making modifications. One more voicemail.
Hey Bob, Tim from North Carolina. Just a quick comment about the voicemail that you had on the recent episode about weapon-mounted lights. Two observations. Number one, I would say that a weapon-mounted light should never take the place of a handheld. It should just be supplemental for most people. Now, granted, if you're law enforcement or something like that, that's a totally different use case than most people have. So, you know, I would say for most people, always have a handheld. And if you can carry a weapon-mounted light or have one on your home defense pistol, then, you know, that's beneficial, because that will let you put both hands on the gun when it's time to shoot and still be able to see what you're shooting at. The other thing that I would say is that you made a comment about not caring for the fact that most weapon-mounted lights extend past the end of the muzzle of the gun. I used to feel the same way until I had some training where we had to do what were essentially contact shots. And I found out then that a weapon-mounted light will, if it extends past the muzzle of the gun, that it can act as a standoff device that will let you make contact shots without pushing the gun out of battery. Just something to think about. Appreciate the show. Thanks for all you do. Cheers. Tim. Bye.
Tim, thanks again. Yes, I forgot about the contact shots. You're right. So having a weapon-mounted light that extends past the muzzle may be good for that. I guess it's a matter of personal preference. I didn't think about that. As I analyze this, I ask myself the question, well, how often am I going to be making a contact shot? Well, maybe more often than I think. And basically, for those of you who don't know what that means if your pistol, especially the muzzle of your pistol, has to actually make contact with the bad guy. Semi-automatic pistols can be easily pushed out of battery and then they won't fire. So having that light as a standoff device, Tim, I'm glad you brought that up. That could be a good asset for having a weapon-mounted light on a pistol that I did not think about. So, excellent voicemail. Great voicemails this week. A good interview this episode with Ben Branham. And just some good stuff out there that has been happening lately. I'm really excited about this one-year test that I'm doing, testing essentially three guns, maybe four guns. And I can't wait until next August when I discuss the complete results of what I found and how it works for me and share it with you. Again, just like with this episode, I will be sharing some things along the way during my test. One last thing I want to mention, Freedom Fighter Support is the name of the program that Ammo.com has, where they take 1% of all of your purchases and they donate it to the organizations I was mentioning earlier in this episode. Freedom Fighter Support. So again, Ammo.com/HandgunWorld. So that's it for this episode. I'll talk to you again on September 15th, 2018. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. Shoot straight, shoot safe, read your Bible every day, and I'll talk to you.